And welcome to Truth Quest with Melody on KHENLP 106.9 Salida. And I want to say the views expressed on this program are those of myself and of my guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the KHEN staff, volunteers, or board of directors. And again, I've got another fine lineup this evening, but the programs are archived at www.gimmesometruth.info. And let's see here. And I also want to state that we'll have some PSAs at the end of the program, but I have a great guest lined up this evening, and it's Dr. Jack Pruitt. And he's a physician who lives in southeast Texas, and he runs a small medical clinic in a rural area near Houston. He has spent many years studying the Bible, the works of Zechariah Sitchin, and the Dead Sea Scrolls and various scriptures of a religious and spiritual nature. The conclusions that he reached that are described in his book, The Grandest Deception, are his own. They do not represent the opinions of Zechariah Sitchin or anyone else. And Dr. Pruitt believes that ancient astronauts came to Earth in our distant past, and they created mankind, and that they and their descendants run the world today. Like he says, he has bet his eternal soul that the conclusion that he has reached are correct. Well, welcome, Dr. Pruitt. I'm going to call you Jack.
Thank you, Mel. Yeah. It's a pleasure to get to visit with you this afternoon.
Well, it's not quite afternoon, but
evening. Night.
But I'm looking forward to this because you've come to some interesting conclusions from some of your research that you've done for your book, The Grandest Deception. And is there anything else you'd like to add about yourself? Because I do know that there's some other aspects that wasn't in your bio that's on your website there, and that you do have a website, thegrandestdeception.com. And so, would you like to fill us in, or should I ask you?
Well, I'll give you a little more information. I have continued to search and seek for the truth, and I do have a sequel to the book, almost ready to publish. I hope to go ahead and have that published within the next month or two, and the title of that book will be The Perfect Slave. And some of your listeners may be familiar with Michael Tellinger and a book that he has written, or he has written several, but his first was Slave Species of God. He lives in South Africa, and he and I, over the past few months, have developed a friendship, and as a matter of fact, in the near future, I'm going to be moving to South Africa, do some research with him, and
write
some more books.
Wow. Yeah, because he's gotten off into some interesting directions with the archaeology and the history of mankind as well. But the other aspect I was going to go to is you've also had a business partner in the past, and which was presidential candidate Ron Paul, and as well as he's currently a House of Representatives. Is he a congressman? Is that right?
That's right. He has now been in Congress for all around 20 years, I suppose. He and I were medical partners for about 20 years as well. And he is currently running for president now for the third time and doing quite well. Looks like he has a real chance to possibly win this time. And it is my sincere hope that he be elected. I think that the United States needs him desperately.
Yeah, you've gotten into some of the aspects of the monetary system. I've heard you mention on some prior interviews, and aspects that Ron Paul is addressing. But Going into your area of research, what made you decide to write this book, and how did you get in this direction? Because obviously, Zachariah Sitchin's work goes in directions that many of us weren't brought up with that kind of information, correct?
That's quite true, and I first heard Zachariah Sitchin probably now between 7 and 8 years ago, and I was actually driving home in the wee hours of the morning and turned on the radio, and George Norrie on Coast to Coast was interviewing Mr. Sitchin, and at that time in my life, I had been involved totally in medicine and totally with, I guess I could say, the Christian religion. I had been just obsessed with trying to understand the Bible for some reason since I was in my mid-20s, and had spent many, many hours studying and searching and asking various theologians questions that I just could never receive satisfactory answers about, and had always been curious along those lines. But then when I heard Sitchin, I had never heard of Anunnaki or had never paid any attention to UFO sightings or any of that. And but he seemed quite sincere to me, and for some reason he kind of struck a chord, and so actually, the very next morning, I went out and bought one of his books, The 12th Planet. I read that book and was intrigued by it, and bought all the rest of them, and spent 7 years, I suppose, almost studying his works and related works. And I became quite curious about things. I had some knowledge of government and politics from all of my years with Ron and my associations with him. Had been to Washington several times, I was just curious about things that I couldn't find answers to, and I certainly didn't start out writing the book. I didn't write the book that I thought I was going to write. I was mainly just searching for some answers, and one thing led to another, and I came to some conclusions, and I decided I'd probably lost my mind, that I could not be correct. And in fact, I put the book down and spent almost a year going back and reviewing all of the evidence, and I'm quite convinced today that the conclusions that I reached are correct.
What book did you think you were going to write?
Well, one of the things that always puzzled me is perhaps came from a Bible verse, actually, and that was that a house divided against itself cannot stand. And so I had a hard time understanding why our government is so secretive. I suppose part of it began with the Roswell incident. I couldn't understand why a government that had the abilities that ours has couldn't do an investigation and determine the truth about the Roswell incident and inform all of the citizens about what the truth is, whether it was an alien ship that crashed or whatever the situation might be. I just couldn't understand why that wouldn't benefit all of us to know the truth. Then many other things. I don't understand why they think we need to be so protected and shouldn't know the truth.
So when you heard Zachariah Sitchin, then it kind of hit a chord, I guess, into the directions that you had questions, and so it took you off in a new direction then, right?
Well, it just stimulated my curiosity more than anything. Quite frankly, I was extremely skeptical. I did not believe that what Sitchin had said was true. And Sitchin, in my opinion, can be difficult reading, and it took me years to work out the details. One of the confusing things, of course, is that each of the Anunnaki have about 5 or 6 different names, and to keep all that clear, who's doing what and who did what, is a little bit difficult. But finally, over the years, I came to believe that I understood what Sitchin had said, and that the evidence supported what Sitchin had said, and basically kind of put 2 and 2 together and came to the conclusions that I reached. I think that we've been so deceived for so long, mankind has, for thousands and thousands of years. But today, I don't believe that there's any reason that we need to live in ignorance any longer. I think the evidence is abundantly available. Difficult to interpret, perhaps. Difficult to find all of it. But I do think that it's readily available to mankind today, and I'm quite optimistic that a great awakening is taking place across our planet and our world, and that things are going to change fairly drastically in the next year or 2 or 3 about how we live and what we believe.
So did you ever get to meet Zachariah Sitchin or talk to him?
Unfortunately, I did not. I certainly still today have questions that I would love to ask Mr. Sitchin. I have had the opportunity to visit with his granddaughter, Janet Sitchin, who is now in charge of his estate and affairs, and she and I have developed a little bit of a friendship. Unfortunately, she's still tied up today trying to settle his estate, but I have some connection with the Sitchin family, but have not had the opportunity to really delve into the things with him that I would have certainly liked to. I was fortunate early on, after publishing the book, to receive an email from some people in Arizona who had the opportunity on several occasions to have Mr. Sitchin as a guest in their home during his speaking engagements and so forth in Arizona. And he had actually written down some private notes and information, some things that necessarily didn't appear in any of his books, and they were kind enough to share some of that with me, and so I would still love to talk to Mr. Sitchin, but I have not had the opportunity.
Okay, now, did his work coincide much with Michael Tellinger's?
Yes, I think that Tellinger's work and Sitchin's work are very supportive of each other.
Okay, so what they do, they go back to a period in history before biblical times, is that right, or...
Well, what actually happened was that, according to Sitchin and all the evidence today, when the Anunnaki initially came to Earth about 450,000 years ago, they splashed down in the Persian Gulf, and they began then to extract gold from the Persian Gulf, monatomic gold. They actually did that for over 28,000 years, until they found huge deposits of gold in South Africa. At that time, and the person in charge, if I can call an Anunnaki a person, was in Key, one of the half-brothers, and when he found all the gold in South Africa, then his half-brother Enlil came to Earth and took over the operation there in Mesopotamia, the lands of the Bible, the area between the Tigris and Euphrates River there, what became the Garden of Eden. And Enki moved to South Africa and took over the gold mining operation. And he called that area in South Africa the Abzu. And actually, Michael Tellinger and a guy named Johannes Hein have now actually found the Abzu, and they're writing books about the Abzu. And so there's tremendous amount of evidence to support Sitchin and this entire story about the Anunnaki that is going to be forthcoming in the next few years if the African government allows us to do so.
And what part of Africa would that be in?
That's just north of Johannesburg. It's actually quite amazing. You can actually Google Earth, and you can see this huge land area that is just strewn with rocks and rock circles and monoliths and things. And this area actually stretches from almost from Johannesburg all the way up to Cairo, Egypt. It is huge. It covers an area of approximately 10,000 square miles. Scientific community, the academic community, are belittling it and minimizing it and saying that these are all natural rock formations, but they're natural rock formations in the shape of statues and big monoliths aligned to certain stars and constellations and so forth, and artifacts. And there's even a possibility that they found a grave site there that they think could well be the grave site of Dumuzi, who was a grandson of Enki, that Sitchin wrote in great detail about where he was buried and so forth. And
okay, now, before we get too much further, now, where did these guys come from?
They came from what Sitchin called a planet named Nibiru. There's some question today about whether Nibiru is actually a planet or a dwarf star or a dark sun or whatever, but they came from some celestial body that Sitchin calls Nibiru that orbits our sun about every 3,600 years. There's a
and that's supposed to be there's and that's supposedly coming around again soon here.
Yes, but it's not really supposed to come into the vicinity of Earth until about the year 3400 A.D. I think there's been a lot of misconception and misinformation about the comet that recently passed by our comet element, and about whether that was going to be Nibiru and there were going to be these great catastrophes associated and so forth. But according to Sitchin's timeline, Nibiru should not return until around 3400 A.D.
Okay, now, as far as where was he getting his information?
From ancient tablets. Actually, Sitchin went to Iraq back late 50s, early 60s, on an archaeological expedition, and they found many, many of the ancient tablets. It's said today that Sitchin himself, his estate, still has about 800 of these. Of course, no one could interpret them for a good while, but now there's a number of people in the world who can read and interpret these tablets. And Sitchin's information comes from the interpretation of these ancient Sumerian tablets. And, of course, the Sumer, the city of Sumer, was really the first known civilization on Earth after the flood.
So this, so
and
they, these,
and these tablets date about to be about 7,000 years old.
So you're, so were these tablets before, you said Sumer after the flood, but I thought I heard you talking about them, these, this civilization being able to, they did some, these tablets before the flood as well, right?
Or, yes, well, the, that's right. Of course, they came to Earth about 450,000 years ago, and they developed great cities and great civilizations prior to the flood. And the flood actually occurred about 13,000 years ago, about 11,000 B.C. And after the flood, of course, it took them a good number of several thousand years to clean up the mud and the mess and the, all of that. And then Sumer was actually established about around 3,800 B.C., so about 6,000 years ago. And so these many of these tablets were written before the city of Sumer was actually created.
Okay, now so this and these tablets were chronicling the this Enki and these Anunnaki, which are the Anunnaki, are they the Nephilim?
Yes.
Are they possibly the Anasazi?
I'm sorry, are they what?
Possibly the Anasazi, the at all? I mean, where you hear the Hopi and some of the other civilizations that were over in this area, would there have been any relation to these?
Well, yes, I certainly think that some of the descendants of the Anunnaki were very influential with these different peoples. For instance, if you look at the Hopi predictions and what was called Hopi mythology for a long time, it is absolutely filled with Anunnaki symbols.
Mm-hmm.
And so certainly the Anunnaki or their descendants had great influence on these people in the ancient past.
Okay.
Many of the cave-dwelling pictures that we see are filled with Anunnaki symbols.
Okay. All right. So going back to where you were going with the, where these brother and stepbrother, is that right? Enki and, I'm trying to remember.
Enki and Enlil are the two half-brothers.
Okay. And they'd gone to Africa. And was this area near where they're doing them diamond mining now at all? Or
there's still gold mining taking place in that area, and it is unbelievable how much gold has been taken out of that area. I don't know if you're familiar with David Wilcock, but you know, he recently had a death threat, apparently, because he and some others had found out some information about gold that is supposed to be stored underground and has been hidden from mankind for thousands of years. And they say they now have documentation to prove that I believe it's 11 million trillion dollars worth of gold has been hidden underground. And there's been a lawsuit brought concerning that, and so be interesting to see how that all turns out. But certainly if you look at Wikipedia, the numbers they give about how much gold is supposed to have been mined on Earth since the beginning of history is certainly very inaccurate. There's been far more gold than what they say.
Okay, so you're stating that they came from another off planet, and they came here to mine gold, and that they settled in Africa. But you're stating also that you know they may have spread out further around the world, or pretty much concentrated in this area. So I'll let you go ahead and continue on with the story. So
you mentioned the Nephilim. If we go way back to the book of Genesis and the story about the Nephilim, what the Anunnaki actually did, when they found gold in Africa, they started mining it, and they actually spent about 144,000 years mining gold. And then the workers, and there were only a total of about 600 Anunnaki on Earth at any one time. That was the most. And about half of them were up in what they called the Eden. The Bible calls it the Garden of Eden, but that's where their space center and mission control and all that was. And then about half of them were down in South Africa mining gold. So there's approximately 300 down there mining gold. After 144,000 years, the miners mutinied, and they just refused to work anymore, said that it was just too difficult, and they just weren't going to do it. And so actually the king of Nibiru, named Anu, who was the father of Enki and Enlil, came to Earth, and they met, and Enki came up with the idea. He was the great scientist of the Anunnaki. He came up with the idea that he could create a slave to do the work for them. And so they decided to let him attempt to do this. I think it actually probably took him somewhere around 20,000 years to do it. It wasn't something that was done overnight, but the Sumerian tablets describe all kind of experimentation that is very convincing. I am an obstetrician gynecologist by training, and so I know a little something about genetics and embryology and artificial insemination and that sort of thing. And these descriptions of what they did are just scientifically very sound, and of course far advanced over where we are even today. But what they did is they found a species that had evolved here on Earth, what we call Neanderthal man. And they took a Neanderthal female and crossed that DNA, an egg from a Neanderthal female, crossed it with DNA from the Anunnaki, the DNA actually from the blood of a young male, and created mankind after many, many failures and many attempts to perfect the process. But they finally developed what the Bible calls Adam. That Adam was sterile, like most hybrids today are if we cross
species.
A horse and a donkey, we get a mule, that's okay. Sterile, and that's the way mankind was when we were first created. The sterile slaves, they then took the DNA from Adam, and they created 14 embryos, 7 male, 7 female, and 14 Anunnaki females volunteered basically to be surrogate mothers. They called them birth goddesses. They implanted these 14 embryos into these 14 Anunnaki females and started creating slaves, 14 at a time. Once they got enough, Enlil decided that he wanted some slaves up at the Garden of Eden at the Eden, and so some of them were moved to the Eden, and creating 14 slaves a year, if they were even doing that many, you don't get very many slaves very quick that way. And the sterile slaves, though, did work for about another 180,000 years. before they gave mankind the ability to procreate.
Okay, but, now, before you go any further, now, obviously, they had longer lifespans, or you did mention that there's some sort of a correlation between human years and their years.
Yes, their planet orbits our sun about every 3,600 years. And so they apparently age 1 year every 3,600 Earth years. And so their lifespans compared to ours are quite long. My estimation is that the average lifespan for an Anunnaki is around 500,000 years. And so it's quite easy to see how they could convince ancient man that they were gods. In our entire lifetime, they don't appear to age a single day. And, of course, they had great technology compared to what they allowed us to use and to have. And
Okay, when we
talk about these large number of years, we have to realize there's really not that many years in their lifetime, although it seems like many in ours.
Okay, I've got two other questions before we go back to the story. One of them being that, did Sitchin ever teach anybody else to read these tablets?
Yes, there are a good number of academicians and others now today who can read these tablets.
But was he working with anybody at the time that, you know, that they could kind of confer with, and I mean, so they could get more work done more rapidly? Because apparently there were a lot of these tablets, right?
Oh yes, there's hundreds of thousands of these tablets.
So how did he find the continuity of the story?
Well, it took Sitchin 30 years to put it together.
Okay.
He published his first book, I think, around 1976. And so it took him about 30 years to put all this together and the chronology of it together. And of course, Sitchin was ridiculed for years, and he took a lot of flack about these books. And
because he did the books like the Earth Chronicles, and there were giants upon the earth, and he had a number of books, right? So
yes, he published 12, 13 books, quite a number of these books now.
Uh-huh.
And that's still a debatable situation today. I mentioned the word Nephilim in the Bible. It is found in the book of Genesis. In the book of Genesis, it says that the sons of God cohabited with the daughters of men. And these sons of God in the Bible were called Nephilim. And the word Nephilim has been interpreted by some to mean giants. That's not an accurate interpretation. The Nephilim were actually the Anunnaki. And when they gave us the ability to procreate, which they did about 15,000 years ago, that's where the story of the Garden of Eden and Adam and Eve and the serpent, that occurred about 15,000 years ago or so. And they basically did that. Enki decided on his own to do that, and he got into great trouble with his brother, who was Enlil, who was very irate that he gave mankind the ability to procreate. But I think Enki decided to do that primarily because they just couldn't keep up with supply and demand. They could not create slaves quickly enough to meet their demands, creating them 14 slaves at a time, and being an obstetrician, I'm not sure how many times these birth goddesses volunteered to do this. Not very many women are going to volunteer to just keep being surrogate mothers too many times, and so I think they had a great need for more slaves, and that Enki simply decided to give mankind the ability to procreate. As a matter of fact, I think there's a tremendous amount of evidence today that he's the one who actually had sex with one of the Eves, and they had a son, and in the ancient Sumerian tablets, that son is called Adapa. There's many stories about Adapa. He was actually taken to Nibiru, and was great knowledge was imparted to him. But anyway, the Anunnaki began to have sex with human females after that, and these became what the Bible calls the mighty men of renown. And of course, they had those children had greater intelligence than humans. They had greater capabilities than humans. I think there's a tremendous amount of evidence today that Noah was actually also a son of Enki and a human female. At any rate, those descendants have continued to be given favored status, and those descendants today we call the establishment or the Illuminati, and they continue to rule our world today just like they did back thousands of years ago, hundreds of thousands of years ago, or 100,000 years ago. But as far as giants, the Anunnaki being giants, there is debate about that. You may have heard an interview I've done a couple of them with Carrie Cassidy and Project Camelot. And Carrie does not agree with me, but I don't believe that the Anunnaki are giants.
Well, did you think that there were giants? Because I'm looking at Zachariah's website, and he did his last book. Looks like it was he did write a book on giants.
There have definitely been giants on this earth, and
but you didn't think they were the
Well, we have skeletal remains of giants, and there's no question that there have been giants. If you look at the Bible again, the giants are called the sons of Anak, A-N-A-K. Anak is just another word for Anunnaki. But the giants that were created, I believe, are these, what Sitchin refers to as demigods, are these people who were created between Anunnaki having sex with human females. The humans, of course, we have about 80% of our DNA is Anunnaki, but about 20% of it is comes from Neanderthals. Neanderthals are still on this planet today, and we refer to them, unfortunately, as the abominable snowman or Sasquatch or Bigfoot or Yeti. We call them by different names, and Lloyd Pye has done some great work to indicate that there are four different types of Neanderthals still on Earth today. And what the Neanderthals found once mankind began to roam the Earth was that we would kill them. We are the only species on this planet, other than the Anunnaki, who kill for no reason. All animals kill, but they kill for self-defense, for food, or for some reason. Humans and Anunnaki were killed for absolutely no reason. And the Neanderthals recognized this, and they simply went to the inaccessible places on Earth. That's where we still find them today, in the high mountains, in the swamps, in the deep forest, and so forth, because they know we'll kill them if they come out. And I think the Neanderthals are extremely intelligent and extremely talented, and I personally would like to see us, instead of spending billions of dollars trying to save some of the species that we try to save here on Earth, is to try to bring the Neanderthals out, because they obviously have some wonderful qualities and traits that that we don't possess. And
okay, now, with the work that Michael Tellinger's doing, is he finding the tablets down there in Africa as well, or were all of these more or less stored up around Mesopotamia?
I don't know that they have found any tablets down there. They've certainly found evidence of this great civilization. that occurred there. Michael wrote a book about what he called a thing called Adam's Calendar. I'm very pleased that he's changed the name, because that's an inaccurate thing. They're now calling it Enki's Calendar, which is really what it was. And this is a huge series of monoliths that are aligned with the solstices and the equinoxes and Orion's belt, different constellations. And with computer programs, they've been able to go back and search the heavens, so to speak. And they've come to the conclusion that this is all lined up with certain stars and constellations that occurred on Earth about 250,000 years ago. And so this is very accurate dating for that, and they brought in all the scientific methods of dating, and we have several now, five or six, that are very accurate. And all of the dating techniques that have been used on the artifacts and relics and the things that they're finding down there date all of this to be over 200,000 years old. The shafts, the gold mine shafts, are all date to be over 200,000 years old. And so all of that is in exact agreement with Sitchin's timeline and our best science today.
Okay, so now you get into, where is the timeline where these life forms, Enki and them, live within the Earth? Is that right? Did part of them split off and go inside the Earth or something of that sort? Am I correct on that?
There was let me go back before I forget, if you don't mind.
Okay, do that, please.
We were talking about the giants, and just to finish that story, okay. The Neanderthals, of course, this what we call Sasquatch, Bigfoot, although those are huge beings, extremely powerful compared to humans, and I believe that where the giants of the Earth come from is when the Anunnaki mated with the humans, that some of those people actually, of course, would inherit the DNA or certain traits from the Neanderthal part of us. We're 20% Neanderthal. And so the traits, the genes for gigantism would certainly express themselves and show up from time to time. And so that's where I believe the giants on Earth came from. At any rate, then
did they have the longer lifespans too?
Yes, and that's why we find the longer lifespans, of course, that are described in the Bible. An interesting factor in that regard was that the Anunnaki found out after they had been on Earth a while and began to have children of their own that their children did not live as long as they did, and that humans did not live as long as their children did, and that Neanderthals did not live as long as humans did. And that was a real concern of theirs. The ancient tablets and Sitchin's books describe how they actually brought what they called the food of life and the water of life from Nibiru to keep their lifespans from shortening so much when they were on Earth, and they thought that this was due to the quick cycle of Earth around the sun and their exposure to sunlight. And so Sitchin talks about the Abzu primarily as being the southern hemisphere and south and Africa, but all surface civilizations. And that was the only thing that I disagreed about Sitchin about. I became absolutely convinced that the Abzu contained both surface civilization as well as underground civilization, and that the Anunnaki simply moved underground and developed these great civilizations underground just so their lifespans would continue to be long and not shorten because of exposure to the sunlight. And then I write a little bit in the book about that makes perfect sense to me as well when you think about a planet like Nibiru. If there's a planet like that that orbits our sun, then it's only in contact really with sunlight for a relatively short period of time compared to how much time it's out in deep space where it would be extremely cold on the surface of such a planet. I don't believe advanced life forms could survive on the surface of a planet like that when it's in deep space. And so I think actually most of the Anunnaki live underground on planet Nibiru, and it is the type of a planet that would have internal heat, and they derive their heat from the interior of the planet. And if you look at things in the Dead Sea Scrolls and other religious scriptures, there is evidence that the Anunnaki look pretty much like what our albinos do. I think they have snow-white hair. I think they're very pale skin and that sort of thing because of evolving underground. They're called serpent people, and if you look at evolution on our planet, then the serpents are actually the species that have the ability to live both on the surface and underground. And I strongly suspect that's why they're called serpent people. I don't agree that they look like serpents or they're reptilian in appearance. I think that's just symbolism for the fact that they live both above ground and below ground.
Okay. So what did these people seem to be okay with being the slaves for these Anunnaki? Or did they have wars and things that take place now that were very similar to, you know, back to that period in history?
If we go back to the old tablets, even on Nibiru, because of the laws as far as inheritance and who is going to become the next king of Nibiru, there it's very strange, and they've passed this down, of course, in the Bible with the Israelites and so forth. But on the planet Nibiru, whoever's going to become the next king is not necessarily the firstborn son. The firstborn son becomes king unless there is another son who is the offspring of the father and his sister or half-sister. Enki and Enlil are both sons of Anu, the king of Nibiru. However, Enki is the firstborn, but Enlil is the son of Anu's sister. And so that makes him by rights the next heir to the throne of Nibiru. There's been a maternal family feud going on Nibiru even before they came to Earth over this matter about which one of these two boys should inherit the throne. The maternal sides of their families, according to Sitchin and the ancient tablets, were embroiled in a battle about that even back on planet Nibiru. That family feud has continued. That family feud is really what the Bible is all about. That Bible is simply a story of the family feud between these two half-brothers. What's taken place on our planet primarily is involved in that. But At any rate, there's numerous battles described in Sitchin's works, great battles in the air with nuclear weapons and so forth that occurred prior to the flood, and these were basically battles between the Anunnaki who sided with Enlil and the Anunnaki who sided with Enki. And then once they created humans to be their slaves, then they finally decided, rather than killing themselves in all these wars and fights, that they would just kind of back off and let the humans and their descendants fight these battles. And there's many such battles described in ancient what we called mythology for years. Doesn't appear that it's really mythology anymore. But those battles between Enki and Enlil continued. Then after the flood, we have Sumer. The battle continued. The one of the sons of Enki actually decided, named Marduk, decided to take over mission control in the space center. And the Anunnaki, Enlil, and his entourage actually nuked the space center and destroyed it just to keep Marduk from obtaining it.
Okay, let me just state that I'm speaking with Dr. Jack Pruitt, who's written the book The Grandest Deception, and he's giving us a description of the story of the chronic Zachariah Sitchin's work and what you have found to in studying his work, correct?
Correct.
Okay, go ahead.
We pick up then with the biblical story about Abraham. The Bible was written by Enlil, from Enlil's point of view. And Enlil actually was the one who basically hired and enticed Abraham, who was a descendant of the Anunnaki, one of these more intelligent, more capable beings on earth than the average human. And Abraham was basically used to try to protect the spaceport. And then the story continues down through Moses. The entire Old Testament, though, is really a story about this family feud. One of the questions that I had for many, many years was, how in the world could God, a loving, all-powerful God, give any human being an instruction to go into some land and kill every man, woman, and child in that land? That was extremely difficult for me, and of course, that's simply not the truth. That didn't happen. And Enlil told Moses to go into Canaan and kill all the Enkiites, every man, woman, and child. That's very understandable. And that feud has continued today. They have deceived us into continuing. We still have the Israel and the Palestinians have been at war for 4,000 years or more, and they have duped us into participating in those wars. And the final battle between Enki and Enlil is described in the Bible in great detail, the battle at Armageddon, the foot of Mount Megiddo, and it is my most sincere hope that enough humans will become enlightened by then that we will simply refuse to participate in that battle.
So what you're saying is that the Bible doesn't necessarily mean that it happened, it unless we don't follow.
If you look at biblical prophecy, everything that the Anunnaki have said that they're going to do, they've done.
Okay.
Biblical prophecy is extremely accurate if you go back thousands of years ago to the time of Abraham and Moses, what they said they were going to do in the Bible, they have pretty much accomplished every single thing. And, of course, we look at that as being divine, that God has had people prophesy that these things were going to occur. But if you look at any of them, really look at the book of Daniel. Daniel prophesied about things that were going to occur 600 years after he lived. And so to our human mind, we think that that revelation had to have been divinely inspired or come from God. But if you look at it in Anunnaki terms, Anunnaki years, to them, they had Daniel prophesy about something that they were going to create or have occur approximately 2 months later. And so it's not so prophetic when you think about it in Anunnaki years. But, unfortunately, the book of Revelation has not all occurred yet. They have told us what they are going to do to us in the next few years. And it is my sincere hope and belief that we have the ability to alter Enlil's plans.
Okay, that's the part that kind of confuses me, but let me go ahead and say this is KHENLP 106.9 Salida, and my guest this evening is Dr. Jack Pruitt, who's written the book The Grandest Deception, and it is based upon a lot of Zachariah Sitchin's works and research into the ancient past. And this is the part I'm a little bit confused on is you know, being that we're dealing with the different time frames here between the lifespans of one and the lifespans of humans and whatever, and then they've given us their prophecy of the future, but we have a free will, is what it sounds like you're saying, that we can affect the future. And that has always been something that I've always been curious about myself, is the book of the Bible a history that we can change or predispose, predictive programming. I don't know.
Let me say one thing. I've said a lot of things already tonight that to many of your listeners are probably sound outrageous and ridiculous and blasphemous and a whole lot of other things. And I just want them to hear that I'm not trying to change what anybody believes. All I'm trying to point out is that there's a tremendous amount of evidence available to us today that has never been available to mankind before. During the last 50 years, this evidence is coming to light, and my hope and my motivation is simply to encourage people to search and seek for the truth themselves, and to look at the information that we now have available and make your own decision about what the truth of the matter is. My belief today is that we are spiritual beings. We are eternal spiritual beings. Our spirit will live eternally. There is absolutely no need for any Messiah or anybody to be viciously murdered in order to atone for our sins. We are not sinful by nature. We've been deceived into believing that, at least the Christians and the Jewish faith has. But that's simply not true.
This is according to some of the research that Zachariah Sitchin has uncovered.
Now, these are not conclusions that Sitchin necessarily reached. I'm putting Sitchin's work together with the Bible, with the Quran, with the Hebrew Bible, Dead Sea Scrolls, Nag Hammadi information, the Hindu and Buddhist scriptures. When you put all of them together, then these are my conclusions, not Sitchin's. At any rate, I believe that actually the Anunnaki are very afraid of humans because they know that we're eternal spiritual beings. They know that we have tremendous powers and abilities and capabilities, and we far, far outnumber them. We far outnumber however many they can bring from Nibiru here. Now, they have greater intelligence. They have greater technology and that sort of thing. But they cannot compete with us if we ever learn the truth and join together in truth and try to solve the problems that we have here on planet Earth. No need whatsoever for us to allow the story that is told in the Bible to continue. What the story actually says is that Jesus will return, set up a new world order, if I can use the Illuminati words, and that mankind will have to pay tribute to him for 1,000 years. He's going to return and fight a great battle at Armageddon, which will be between all the nations on earth led by the Antichrist against the Israelites, his chosen people, and this will be a great nuclear holocaust, and millions and millions and millions of humans will be killed, and then the ones who survive, there'll be what the Bible calls the sheep goat judgment, and that's basically the ones that sided with Enlil will be determined to be sheep, the ones that sided with Enki will be determined to be goats, and then the goats will have to pay tribute to Jesus for 1,000 years, and then Nibiru will return and basically wipe mankind off the surface of this planet. The Anunnaki who remain will be safe and secure underground in what the Bible calls New Jerusalem. But the Anunnaki have two agendas, basically, on this planet. They want to acquire all of the wealth on the planet. And they've done a very good job through the International Monetary System, the branch that we call the Federal Reserve. They've acquired about 75% of the wealth on this planet already. And they want to dumb mankind down and remove our spirit and turn us into a biological robot to do the work. They still are going to want slaves. We've been slaves for thousands of years. We just don't realize it. But we're still very, very dangerous because we have a spirit. And they're putting things in our atmosphere, in our air. They put things in our water. They put things in our food. They abduct us and manipulate our DNA and our genetics. They put things in our medications that may relieve some symptoms but harm us in tremendous ways. And I could go on and on and on.
Okay, so you're stating that they're still here conducting what takes place on this planet.
I believe that Enki is still here and probably still alive. It's quite possible that that he's turned his operations over somewhat. In fact, I'm not going to go there. But at any rate, I think there's evidence that yes, they still remain on Earth. They still have underground locations where they survive and where they manipulate us and control our minds, and they run the world from their underground locations through what we call the establishment of the Illuminati, who are their descendants.
Do you feel like that they still have a lot of contact with their from where they come from, or other entities, or are you just going strictly from what, you know, the historical tablets were telling us?
With the technology that they have available, I'm sure that they still have contact with Nibiru and what's going on in Nibiru, but what we should understand is that basically Enki and the Enkiites have remained on Earth. Enlil and his son, his human, part human, part Anunnaki son, who is Jesus, has returned to Nibiru. And they will return and try to defeat Enki and the Enkiites at the Battle of at Armageddon. And so if we look at it from the perspective of the Bible, we must remember that Enlil basically is the one who wrote the Bible, and what he has written is what he believes is going to occur. Now, I don't believe for one minute that Enki and his entourage believe that Enlil is going to win the battle at Armageddon. As a matter of fact, if we look at this son that Enki had with Eve that was named Adapa, I think there's some evidence now, and at least in my mind, I believe that Adapa is actually going to become the Antichrist, and that so Enki's part human son, Adapa, is going to basically be battling Jesus, who is Enlil's part human son, in this great battle at Armageddon to see who gets planet Earth, basically. Unfortunately, it doesn't matter which one wins, really. If Enlil wins, then we lose our spirit and we basically lose hope as far as a race, and we're just biological robots for no telling how long. If Enki wins, we may retain our spirit and have some small amount of hope, but we're still just dumbed down slaves who are never going to be able to get anywhere and accomplish anything, because we're just going to continue to do the bidding of the Anunnaki. So I think it's extremely important that mankind wake up and realize that we're going to lose either way as far as the battle at Armageddon. And so we got to quit playing by their rules and by their regulations and doing things their way. If humans are going to survive as a species and become anything, then we need to realize what the truth of the matter is on this planet, and put our heads and our spirits together and see if we can come up with some solutions.
Okay, now
otherwise our only hope is truly divine intervention.
Okay, now you got into a little bit in one of your interviews about, you know, how they went into Iraq this last time and they actually took more clay tablets, but why would they have used that type of tablet? And in the other question I want to bring up here is, then what I think I'm hearing you say is there may be other life forms that might be supporting us in other ways or on other planets or other, you know, out there, out in space. There's got to be more than just this group of, you know, from Nibiru.
Oh, absolutely. I believe that there are other life forms throughout the universe. You know, we have, of course, the psychics and the channelers and all the various and the sundry stories about other extraterrestrial beings who have given them information and that sort of thing. I personally think that some of that may well be true. I think the difficult thing for most of us who have not had such experiences is that we have to be very cautious and very skeptical about it because the Anunnaki are absolute masters at deception, and I also have absolutely no doubt in my mind that they have created some of these things simply in order to further deceive us and give us misinformation.
Okay, so you don't think that there's other life forms that are influencing us so much that it's pretty much, you know, we're pretty much left to these two groups?
No, I believe that there's life forms throughout the universe.
And, no, I mean here, though.
Certainly, I would assume that and hope that all of them are benevolent, but certainly some of them would be benevolent to our plight, I think. And so I think that it's quite possible that some of these, some of the information that the psychics and channelers receive may be very accurate information.
No, but I meant, are on these tablets and the like, do they bring in other civilizations into the history, you know, the history on these tablets, or is it just...
No. Well, no. The only thing on the Sumerian tablets is that the Anunnaki themselves believed that they were created by some supreme divine entity.
Okay.
And even though they call themselves gods and call, you know, and actually if you look at the Bible and the Hebrew Bible and you look at the things that are attributed to Yahweh or to God, it's actually a composite. Some of the things that our Bible and the Hebrew Bible says are things that Enlil did, some of the things Enki did, some of the things Marduk did, some of the things some of the other Anunnaki did, and those Bibles have just put all of those things together and created a monotheistic deity that did all these things. But if you look at the ancient tablets, those things were done by several of the Anunnaki.
Okay. So getting into the tracing of the various lineages, what would be their purpose in that?
Well, that's what my second book is all about. Part of it, of course, is to obtain all of the wealth on this earth. If you look at the establishment or the Illuminati, these bloodlines have been extremely carefully preserved, and there is a tremendous amount of evidence now. The last information I saw showed that there are only about 100 families and their descendants on this planet who own 80% of the wealth, or 75% of the wealth of the entire planet. All the rest of us put together only own about 25% of the wealth on this planet today. So these bloodlines are carefully monitored and tracked, one, just in order to obtain all the wealth. There are other reasons. I have talked a little bit about it on some other radio interviews. I'm hesitant to get into it too deeply because, like I say, that's what my second book primarily is all about, but part of the reason for these bloodlines is because of the what the Bible calls the mark of the beast. In the Bible, we're told that if we accept the mark of the beast or we have the mark of the beast, then we're going to spend eternity in hell and all of this sort of thing. And that's all a bunch of misinformation. The mark of the beast actually is something that the Bible also says this, that if you don't have the mark of the beast, once Jesus takes over his reign, or the Antichrist does, and we go through this siege period during the reign of the Antichrist, that you're not going to be able to buy or sell anything during this period of time, unless you have the mark of the beast. Well, that's going to be true. That is going to happen. And so for mankind, it's going to be extremely difficult to survive during those years. You can't buy food, can't buy medicine, can't buy anything unless you have the mark of the beast. Well, the mark of the beast is really something that the establishment and the Illuminati have gone to great ends to be sure that they do have the mark of the beast, and this has to do with bloodlines and DNA and that sort of thing, which I explain in great detail in the next book.
So as far as how do you, I mean, the people that you, I mean, coming from knowing what the Bible Belt is like, I bet this has really put a little bit of a ripple in the people that your family and whatever. Or do they seem to be pretty open-minded about looking at this kind of information and accepting it?
Well, I actually thought this little rural area where I live, that if when I published the book, I thought I'd probably be tarred and feathered and run out of town. And I certainly expected to be ridiculed and embarrassed and that sort of thing. I would just have to say that worldwide I have received thousands of emails and hundreds of phone calls since publishing the book, and about 98% of that has been supportive and positive, much to my surprise. I never expected the response to the book that I have received. I would say that there's very few people on this planet who agree with what I've said in its entirety, but they agree with bits and pieces of it. And I think what is really happening in our world is that many, many people today realize that something is bad wrong with our world. They don't know what it is. They don't understand it. But nobody trusts our government anymore. Many people have questions about religion and things that they have been taught, and so I'm finding that there are many people around the world who are pretty open-minded to, in regards to at least be willing to look at some evidence and to try to search for the truth, and that's what I'm overjoyed about. Like I said, I'm not interested in whether anybody believes what I believe or not. But I am extremely concerned that and hopeful that I can just encourage some people to look at the evidence and decide for themselves what the truth of the matter is.
And so you've really stepped out into an area. I mean, I've just recently started looking at this kind of information myself. And I mean, although I've always had a curiosity because there's a lot of things out there that I never did feel fit a lot of either, you know, accepted belief systems.
Right.
And I realized once I started doing research into what's going on in the world at this point in time, I realized, well, if they're lying to us in one area, why should they not lie to us in every other area? It's kind of peeling away the onion. Every time we try to look into something new, you find more and more deceptions. So, but one of the things you brought out in one of your interviews was that the people back then, you seemed to feel, didn't have a reason to be deceitful, and that those that were writing down on the tablets, they were chronicling more. I mean, who was writing the information on the tablets? Was that the Sumerians? Were they Enlils or Enki's story on those?
Well, let me just say that one of the earliest writers that that we have some information about is Enoch in the Bible. The Bible says that Enoch walked with God for 300 years, and then he was taken to heaven. What actually happened was there was a man named Enoch, and he became very close within Lil, and he was taken to the Garden of Eden, and his job was to write down things that Enlil basically dictated to him to write. And it's very surprising when you stop and think about it. We know, for instance, that that he wrote a book called the Book of Enoch, and we have found most of that book. We don't have it in its entirety, but bits and pieces in the Dead Sea Scrolls. So if indeed there was a man named Enoch who walked with God for 300 years and God took him to heaven, and this man wrote a book, why in the world would that book not be part of the Bible when we have so many other books that in the Bible that could not be nearly as important as that book is?
There's a lot of good questions out there, aren't there?
Yeah. And then if you look at church history, if you study church history, and you realize who actually decided which book should be in the Bible, that is total nonsense. I mean, these guys that decided, they didn't even agree about it. They fought and feuded about it for years and disagreed, and they were scoundrels themselves. Anyway, that's a different story. But what has happened over time is I do believe that there were honest, sincere people who have tried to write down what they believe to be the truth and impart some knowledge to mankind. But the Anunnaki seem to always find it and alter it and edit it and change it to suit them and to deceive us. And this was another one of the big disagreements with the brothers early on. N.T. knew that he had created a species of beings that had a spirit and were a soul and were spiritual beings. And he actually formed the very first secret society, and he called it the Brotherhood of the Serpent. And his intent was to use that society, that secret group of Anunnaki and humans, to impart spiritual knowledge to mankind. Enki doesn't have a problem in the world with us being slaves and working for him. But he didn't believe that they should destroy our soul or our spirituality, that we should be allowed to evolve spiritually and grow spiritually. Unfortunately, his brother Enlil did not agree with that, and they had a big to-do, and Enlil gained the control of the Brotherhood of the Serpent, and he decided that rather than to impart knowledge, spiritual knowledge to mankind, that he would just convince mankind that he was God and that we should worship him and worship the Anunnaki. And that's exactly what happened. And there's a wonderful book called The Gods of Eden, written by William Bramley, that goes into detail about all the secret societies and all of that. And all of our secret societies have really evolved from this Brotherhood of the Serpent. And they've been used by the Anunnaki and still used today, tremendously today, to deceive mankind and to destroy our spirituality and to teach us a bunch of false nonsense. And the truth is, even though we've been deceived into believing that the United States was established on Christian principles by Christian men. That's absolutely not true. It was our founding fathers were all primarily very high-ranking Freemasons. If you look at our Declaration of Independence, Declaration of Independence was signed by, 54 men, I think. Don't hold me to these numbers now, but 48 of them, all but six were high-ranking Freemasons. And if you go back and you read what our founding fathers said, many of them have written articles about the fact that this nation was not founded on Christian principles by Christians. And yet, that's not what our history books say. That's not what I was taught when I was a child, anyway.
Were you a Mason?
I'm sorry?
Were you a Mason?
I was at one time when I was very young. In my early 20s, I had an uncle who was a Mason, and he got me into Masonry, and I didn't last very long. I only stayed in Masonry about a year. And don't get me wrong, there's really nothing at all wrong with probably 99% of people who are in Masonry.
Mm-hmm.
The lower rankings, the people in Masonry are just good, honest folk like anybody else, searching for the truth. And unfortunately, once you get up to the high levels, then things change drastically, and the Anunnaki control them, and they use the secret societies like Freemasonry actually to try to find people who have exceptional talents and exceptional abilities. And there are some just common folks who have risen through the ranks of Freemasonry and obtained top levels and been given some information that the average Mason does never receive, and have been used greatly by the Anunnaki. Unfortunately, the establishment and the Illuminati are going to end up with the same fate as us commoners. Once the Anunnaki get everything they want, they have no need for them either then.
Okay, so if they came here to mine the planet, and if they've acquired most of the wealth here, are they going to keep it here, or are they going to take it back to this planet?
The Bible actually says, I don't know how we got so off on what the Bible actually says, but if you look at the Book of Revelations, the Book of Revelations actually says that God is going to return to earth and spend eternity on earth with man. Doesn't say we're going to go to heaven and spend eternity in heaven with God. It says just the opposite. And then it goes on to describe how it's going to be what the Book of Revelations call a new earth, and that on this new earth, God's going to come to earth, spend eternity with man, and God and mankind are going to reside together in a place called New Jerusalem. It goes on to describe that New Jerusalem is a city that is about 1,500 miles long, 1,500 miles wide, and 1,500 miles high, that it is a cube, and it's made out of pure gold, and the streets are pure gold, and that it has absolutely no need for sunlight. The Anunnaki plan to build New Jerusalem, this city of that size, underground. And that's why it doesn't need sunlight. It also says in that city that there will be, that God will wipe away every tear. There'll be no crying by mankind. Well, there'll also be no laughter. They've removed our soul. They've removed our emotions. They're going to remove our ability to reproduce ourselves. And we're just going to be dumbed down, soulless, biological robots, according to what the Bible really says. But that's why they need so much gold. It takes a lot of gold to build a city 1,500 miles long, wide, and high with gold streets.
And what do you think there's, what purpose? Why would they want gold, it to be made of gold? Is that have some kind of
gold has
power?
Very, very special properties, and part of the reason they need gold, in my opinion, is that gold is a tremendous reflector of light. They've got to have light underground. Gold also is a tremendous barrier against ultraviolet radiation. If you look at our, even our astronaut space suits, the headpiece appears to be gold, and that's because there's gold leaf in that to protect their eyes from the sun. Gold has many, many other properties that a tremendous conductor of electricity, which will be invaluable underground. And that's a whole nother book. But
well, one of the things that always struck me is, you know, if they have this advance in technology, I would have figured they would have come up with a way to for alchemy, and as opposed to having to mine and go to such lengths to create this slave race. But, you know, what really has piqued my interest, a lot of things that you've brought out in this, is in the research that I'm doing now, I see so many threads that kind of tie into things you're talking about. And slavery looks to be pretty much the where we're being guided to, or have always been and didn't realize it, and now it's more overt and in our face.
Well, you know, one of the things that we see if you study the occult is it's very important for the occult to tell us what they're going to do to us. And for instance, if one of these occult groups decides to kidnap somebody and sacrifice them, a human sacrifice, they tell you beforehand. It's very important that they instill fear. And the Anunnaki are the same. It's very important to the Anunnaki that they instill fear in us, and we live in fear. And there's many, many reasons why they need to do that. But it's also very important for them to have power over us, that they tell us what they're going to do to us. And that's exactly what the Bible is. The Bible is simply them telling us what they're going to do, and then seeing if they can keep us so deceived and confused and dumbed down that we can't interpret it and don't know what they're going to do to us. And so it's important for mankind, though, to recognize the truth and to realize that they've told us what they're going to do. Now, what are we going to do about it? And they tell us what many other ways, too, besides religion. There's all kind of symbolism. If you look at the city of Washington, D.C., that whole city was laid out and designed full of Anunnaki symbols. And there have been a few books written about that. Very interesting, the symbolism and the symbolism of in Egypt and all around the world, really. Everywhere. We see it on TV every day. Tremendous amount of Anunnaki symbolism in our advertisement and in our mass media every single day. And we don't have a clue what it means. But
those who designed it did, and so, because I mean, a lot of that was Masonic symbolism and Egyptian.
Right. And, yeah, so. and of course, when I say we don't have a clue, a lot of people do realize what some of these symbols mean. I'm talking about the masses, the general populace don't have any idea what most of that is, but they believe that, you know, if they tell us what they're going to do to us, and we're too dumbed down to interpret and to know what they're saying, that that gives them great power. And it does. So it's important for us to be able to begin to start interpreting this and understanding all the symbolism and what they're trying to tell us.
Well, it appears that, you know, there was a period of time that they didn't do so much in the genetic manipulation, although, you know, you see that in animal breeds and things of that sort where, you know, that has been going ongoing. But as far as humans, it seems to be more prevalent now than it has been for a period of time, right?
Well, we have. Yes, that's very true. And of course, we have this whole new branch of science, I guess you could call it, that we're beginning to see a lot of information about what they're calling transhumanism,
mm-hmm.
where they're crossing human DNA with other types of DNA to try to create superhuman, super warriors, whatever rationalization and justification for doing this sort of thing that they can come up with. I think that is extremely, extremely dangerous and absolutely the wrong direction for mankind to head. But by the same token, in my mind, at least more important than that, is for humans, for mankind to come to the understanding and the realization that we have the ability to alter our own DNA. You and I can alter our DNA. It's just that we've been told we can't, and we don't know how yet, and we don't believe that we can do it, but we can do it. And so if we wake enough people up and people realize that all these horrible things that they're doing, we can overcome all of that. Just a matter of searching for the truth and finding out what the truth on this planet is, and then we certainly have the tools and the capability to deal with the Anunnaki.
Yeah, but one of the things is getting through those that have become subjected to the will of the Anunnaki that are here running this planet, right?
Well, it is going to be a tremendous uphill battle, no question about that. And the sad thing about it, in my mind, is that I don't know if you're familiar with the what's called the Georgia Guidestones.
Right.
But back in 1980, they put the Guidestones up, and they told us in 12 different languages, or 8 different, or I forget how many there are now on that thing, but, you know, that they're going to reduce the human population to around 500 million. Well, there's almost 6.5 billion people on this earth today. So that means that they're planning on killing about 600 billion of us. I'm sorry, 6 billion of us.
Right, right.
Unfortunately, I suspect that a lot of humans are going to be murdered and slaughtered in various ways.
Well, those of us that are out there
before enough wake up to solve the problem. But I'm extremely optimistic about the future of mankind. I do believe that there's going to be some who are going to survive the siege and survive the ravages that are to come, and that we will eventually rid this planet of this evil influence that's present today.
Do the dinosaurs show up in any of these scrolls, tablets?
Not to my knowledge, actually. You know, we're talking now. I don't remember for sure, but we're talking as far as the Anunnaki 450,000 years ago, and the dinosaurs were on Earth, 100 million years ago or so. Now, there is an ancient tablet that we call today the creation epic, or the Epic of Creation, which actually goes into great detail about how the Earth and this solar system was formed. And our best science today is becoming more and more in agreement with what this ancient tablet says, and that tablet's about 4,500 years old. Actually now, that, as well as the Bible, is actually very compatible with evolution on Earth, although I don't believe that the Bible talks specifically about dinosaurs like some claim, but it does talk about evolution and how life on Earth started in the water and then evolved up through higher animals to we got to Neanderthal, and then of course our scientists have been trying to convince us that there's a missing link somewhere between Neanderthal and human, and of course there's no missing link. What happened, but it was the Anunnaki simply altered Neanderthal with their own DNA and created us.
Okay, now von Däniken came out of about the same period of time that Sitchin was doing his work. Did they coincide at all in their work?
Somewhat. It's been so long since I've read the von Däniken information that I've forgotten exactly what all he said, but certainly he wrote about aliens coming to Earth. He wrote about UFOs and that sort of thing. The thing that impressed me so much about Sitchin is I think Sitchin had a very good scientific mind, and I think Sitchin did a very good job of documenting his evidence. I mean, we have thousands of these old tablets it's just impossible in my mind for me to believe that all of these ancient tablets were written in order to try to deceive us. I think that some of the information on those tablets has been altered, edited, and changed to try to deceive mankind, but I don't think those tablets themselves were written for that purpose and planted on Earth for that purpose.
Okay, and in anywhere, I may have asked this before, but let me make sure I'm clear on this. There wasn't any other type of extraterrestrial that were documented on these tablets that they found. They were strictly of this Anunnaki.
Not on those tablets. Now, of course, there are others who have written about civilizations that appeared on Earth before the Anunnaki even arrived. And, a guy named Jack Churchward, actually his grandson, we did a webinar together, he and I and Michael Tellinger and Jason Martell. Jason Martell's the young guy that's on the History Channel about the ancient alien series and all that. He's on there a lot. And Jack Churchward's grandfather wrote about a lost civilization called Mu that was supposed to have been on Earth prior to the Anunnaki. And, the Atlantis and the Lemurians and some of those, I think there's some confusion about some of that. At least in my mind, there's some confusion. And then, of course, the Frenchman Anton Parks, his works haven't been translated completely into English yet, but he presents some evidence about civilizations that were supposed to occur on Earth prior to the Anunnaki. But those things, in my mind, are still speculative and hearsay, but I feel finally that we have some concrete evidence that we can rely on as far as the Sumerian tablets.
Okay, did the Sumerians document civilizations out away from them and other continents at all? Are you aware of that at all?
I'm not aware of that. No.
Okay.
Perhaps there's some information in some of the tablets. Certainly, I haven't. I cannot read the tablets.
Right.
And so there may be some information there that I'm certainly not aware of.
Okay, so they weren't necessarily a mariner or trading type civilization like some of the other ones, like the Phoenicians or.
Yes. Now they, the Phoenicians, of course, evolved out of the original Sumerian civilization, and they were great traders and merchants, and of course Marduk, the firstborn son of Enki, is actually the one who founded and built the Babylon. And so the Anunnaki and their pure Anunnaki descendants were actually the pharaohs of Egypt for a long time until they began then to have some pharaohs who were part Anunnaki, part human. But originally, Enki was probably the first pharaoh of Egypt. And his son Marduk was the next one. If you study Egyptology, if you go back to Ta, that was actually Enki, and Ra was actually Marduk.
Okay, so did you have any idea what they figure that the pyramids would have been, or what they were designed to? Would that have been mentioned in any of this work, or?
That is some very interesting work, and Sitchin in some of his books does a good job of showing how the Great Pyramid was actually used as a beacon or a guide to help the spacecraft
These can be seen from outer space, right?
I'm sorry?
These can be seen from outer space, right?
Oh, yeah. The Great Pyramid can be seen from tremendously high high out in space.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been some interesting work done by, I forget the name now, but by some scientists who have come up with the idea that they thought that the original reason for building the pyramid had to do with creating energy, that it was kind of a combustion chamber for, I forget the details, but basically water being split into hydrogen and oxygen, and then hydrogen being used as energy, and certainly the Anunnaki had need for some energy source. They didn't use oil to fly their rocket ships and their UFOs and their craft around. They have some other form of energy.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a possibility. They're great, just great electromagnetic forces, and a young man in who lives in London now, named Keith Hunter, has done some wonderful work in regards to how the Earth itself provides free energy. We really have no need for oil or electricity or these different types of energy that we use. We have the technology. We don't. It's not made available to us, but the Anunnaki did and do have free energy available, probably some way that they extract hydrogen from water.
Okay, now, before we get, because we're running down here on time, and I enjoyed the interview here, and wanted to get a couple more things here that I just wanted to toss out. Did the Anunnaki have anything to do with Mars or the Moon, and would they have had anything to do with the, you know, the architecture in Asia, Southeast Asia, India, Romania, the pyramids in Romania, or, you know, again over in the Mayan or cultures as well?
Let me do the second part of that first, because that's quick and easy. Actually, all of the ancient temples and ruins were built by the Anunnaki or their descendants, and they're all aligned towards certain stars and constellations and so forth, used as of course, the Mayans created great calendars, but Sitchin does a good job of explaining a lot of that again in some of his books. But basically, knowledge all around the world and these ancient ruins and temples and so forth were all created by Anunnaki and their descendants, mainly their sons and grandsons, the true Anunnaki. As far as Mars, we do have an incident that was made public, I believe, around 1989. It's now known as the Phobos incident, when the Russians sent two of their spacecraft to explore Mars. They got there and started returning pictures, and the first one actually was, well, one of them was destroyed before it sent any pictures back, but the other one actually took several pictures, a series of pictures, and then the very last picture shows some type of, looks like a missile fired from one of the moons on Mars. This moonlet of Mars is called Phobos, and it's supposed to be a hollow moonlet, and this missile came from Phobos and destroyed the other Russian spacecraft. But Sitchin also provides real convincing evidence that the Anunnaki used Mars as a relay station between Earth and Nibiru, and in fact, they would transport food of life, water of life, and any other supplies that they needed to Mars. That would then be transported to their spacecraft that were orbiting Earth and then on down to Earth, and vice versa. So they've had outposts on Mars for thousands and thousands of years. There's some evidence that much of the gold has been transported to Mars, and there's even a little bit of evidence that this moonlet of Mars, Phobos, the hollow moonlet, the interior, that may be the construction site where they've actually moved a lot of gold and are in the process of constructing New Jerusalem with the intent of, you know, the Bible says that New Jerusalem will be come down to earth from heaven, and may well be that they construct New Jerusalem on Mars or in the moonlet Phobos and then transport it here to earth if we let them get that far.
Okay, now, you know, I never hear him speaking about Venus. And did any of this come up in any of the work that Sitchin worked with?
I'm not sure I understood what you said.
The planet.
I think you asked me about Jesus.
No,
or Venus. Venus?
Mm-hmm.
Well, Sitchin writes, of course, about all of the planets, and of course, the Sumerian tablets are full of symbolism about the planets, I forget whether they're cylinder seals or actual tablets, but that show the flight of the Anunnaki from Nibiru to Earth. And in those tablets, the planets are numbered according to the way that they approach them from deep space. And so coming from deep space inward, then the Earth is the seventh planet. Of course, we would do it the opposite. We would measure it from the sun, I guess, going out. But the planet is number seven, and Sitchin talks quite a bit, actually, about all of the other planets and that sort of thing. And then the creation epic itself talks about how the planets were formed. I don't remember just off the top of my head anything that Sitchin said specifically about Venus or any civilization existing on Venus.
Okay. And lastly, on the underground, if we go through this Armageddon, whatever, there's supposedly been the Anunnaki living underground. Is that right? Will they?
Let me refer your listeners to a very interesting interview that Project Camelot did with a Dr. Pete Peterson. Dr. Peterson is an absolute genius, and
right,
he was the one primarily responsible for much of the technology that NASA has. He worked for the government for some 20 years, top secret underground stuff that they were doing. And there is tremendous evidence today that the U.S. government has built about 1,400 what they call military bases underground. These military bases that are all underground, of course, cost billions and billions of dollars to build, and the U.S. public has not been given any of the details or information about that. And also, all 1,400 of these are connected by trains that go Mach 2 speed.
Mm-hmm.
We have nothing on the surface that goes Mach 2 speed. There's technology being used by the government underground.
So you're saying that we're working with the Anunnaki then?
We're working at the direction of the Anunnaki.
That's what I mean.
There's also a very interesting comment that Peterson makes. It said that, I don't think even the Illuminati really know who they're working for and what they're doing, because when they found out that Obama was going to be our next president, become our next president, once he won the election, they took him underground to brief him and explain to him how things were to be done and what he was going to have to do. Peterson said that he became so distraught and upset, shaking and trembling, that they had to lie him down and let him recover before they could even finish briefing him. So even people like President Obama, I think when he was first elected, I don't think he had a clue what the truth really was. They convinced them very quickly to either do what they tell them to do, or else they assassinate them, like John Kennedy and Abraham Lincoln, and tried to assassinate Reagan. They just didn't quite make it with him. But they're evil beyond belief.
Right.
They will go to no ends to get done what they want done here on this earth.
Okay, I'm speaking with Dr. Jack Pruitt, and he's written the book of, my mind just went blank at the end of the evening. Go ahead and tell him your website.
The Grandest Deception. The website is just thegrandestdeception.com. There is a little excerpt from the book and a video trailer there and some of my schedule there, and I would you can order a book there. I hope that I've piqued some curiosity, and some of you will search for the truth for yourself.
And you're expecting your newer book to come out when now?
I hope to get that published and ready within the next couple, 3 months. I don't have a definite date yet, but the book's basically finished. It's just a matter of doing a little bit more and fine-tuning a few things and then getting it published.
And I can imagine, you know, with your collaboration, with you working with Michael Tellinger, it could be quite interesting.
I think there will be more books to follow soon. He's working extremely hard over there on his own books, and I'm trying to get my medical practice sold and my affairs cleared up here, and I plan to join him soon.
Well, we look forward to all of this because it's quite interesting on hearing about other history than what we've been led to believe has taken place out there, and I'm sure there's more that needs to, that's going to come forth in the future. And again, I want to thank you again, Dr. Pruitt and Jack, and that we'll be talking again soon when we do another interview on my other radio program on Oracle Broadcasting. So again, I want to thank you very much.
Well, very good. I look forward to our next one, and I enjoyed visiting with you tonight very much, and I hope we have piqued some curiosity with your listeners, and I thank you for inviting me.
Okay. Good night.